Hey, buddy.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Hey, guys. You are at a Priest and a Rabbi podcast, which grew out of a radio show that that the rabbi and I have on WSTU 1450 out in Martin County. But since those airwaves only go so far.
This way we can reach much more.
Many more. We can reach Kansas. We just found out we reached Kansas.
But, you know, it's an interesting because although this, you know, this podcast did, you know, spawn out of a radio program, it also developed out of a deep, deep friendship and relationship that we both have fostered and channeled over the last year or two.
It's been cool, man. We usually go out to lunch, and then we spend about. We like to spend 100% of it talking about what are we going to talk about on this podcast or on this radio show, but a lot of it is just, you know, catching up with each other and seeing how we're all doing. It's been a good relationship, and now we show up at each other's places of worship, and all that good stuff. But so today, buddy, you know, we are coming in at the end of February, and now we have our Black History Month episode, which is not just, hey, let's just talk about Black history. We're bringing in Dr. J. Thompson. So this guy has such a huge history here in Martin County. He was the first one to integrate, come into the white schools as a teacher, and became Teacher of the Year, written books, obviously PhD professor, and there's one over the students, it sounds like. And then we got the vice mayor. The vice mayor, she's originally from Jamaica, and she has just risen in the ranks here. She's a lawyer in town, and so we'll have these two on today.
And the nice thing is also, it's not just, as you said, it's not just talking about Black History Month. It's understanding the history behind it. Why? Why was it created? Where have we come since, you know, since the 1960s to the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and where we are currently today? Have we changed? Are we any better today than we were decades ago?
Yep. And a little bit of trivia for you before you even listen to the rest of this podcast, which will be answered in this podcast, is which president is made the presidential decree of Black History Month. Do you know that? And Black History Week started way before then, but which was the president who actually made a decree? You'll learn that today, today, when you're listening to this podcast. So, you know, we're on a variety of different platforms. You might be listening on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, any of the ones out there. And so if you do, we ask of you, you know, to subscribe and to give us a ranking. 5 stars is always great. We always appreciate that.
Well, I think it's worthy. I think it's a worthy endeavor for us to get the 5 stars. But
yeah, we're not just sitting here goofing off. You know, we're doing some prep. We're doing them. We care about this passionately, and leave some comments there as well. Preferably positive. You know, that's great.
And suggestions and
You
know, things for us to consider and topics of discussion that we can certainly explore on a, you know, interfaith, non-denominational kind of platform.
Absolutely. And we have an email address. So if you have questions or we've had some people actually reach out and have us come and do some live events recently. So you can reach us at apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. So if you didn't see that one coming, then now you know. If you don't know, now you know.
So just so we are clear, it's not priestandarabbi@gmail.com. It's a priest. And a rabbi at gmail.com.
Yes, articles before each noun there. Not surname, but descriptive noun.
Good.
Yeah. So, but in any event, so, you know, we hope you enjoy today. You'll get Dr. J. Thompson and Ewell Clark, and we're just so happy that you're here joining us with this. And you are also going to hear our opening segment, which is always about, what funky thing did Rabbi's daughter say this week? Or one of them, at least. Yes.
Keep listening.
Keep listening. All right. God bless you. Enjoy the podcast.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, everyone. It is 9 a.m. on the Eastern Standard Time from all you people. I know that throng of people out in the state of Washington who are listening to us. It is now 6 a.m. for you, so good morning to you all. And we are so pleased to have one more episode here going for A Priest and a Rabbi. We have not one, but two guests with us today. Today our theme is going to be talking about, it is February, and we'll be focusing on Black History Month and getting into just why. Why is there a Black History Month? Where did it come out of? And how does it really serve our community, and what are the goals of the community? So we're going to have two special guests that we'll be introducing in just a little bit who will be speaking about this, who will have very good things to say about it. But first, let me check in with my wonderful colleague, my rabbi, Rabbi Matthew Durbin. Good morning, brother. How are you?
I'm super. How are you this morning?
Brother, it's just always good to be here doing this work with you. And I just want to start off with today's show that I think we need to have always an opening segment about what's up with the rabbi's daughter. Because your daughter is such a character, and every time you tell a story, we all end up on the floor laughing. So do you have a good one for us today that you can share with us?
So The beauty of my children are you never know what they're going to say. So, you know, in the past, as I mentioned before, you know, there are times we'll be driving. Both my kids go to Palm City Elementary, and one of my youngest goes to our Temple Preschool. And every morning as we drive down the street, my kids will see that very famous white car that has lights on top, that happens to say on the side of it, Martin County Sheriff.
Right.
And my daughter will look and go, "Hey, Dad, yeah, be cool." What do you mean, be cool? Be cool for what? She goes, "It's the police, Dad. It's the sheriff. You got to be cool. Look around." Okay. So, you know, it's those type of things where you know, that and my three-year-old the other day, which I cannot say on the air just based on expletives, but she had
my three-year-old. Say based on expletives.
So she's been exploring the world of vocabulary, and happened to see a troop of motorcycles going down the street, and for majority of them not wearing motorcycle helmets. And my three-year-old had kind of said, "Is that person a?" We'll leave it there. What's the matter with them? Don't they know that they can harm themselves? And a part of me that wanted to say, you know what? Let's drive up real close, roll down that window. Why don't you say it to them? But then I realized that I'm in Florida, and tempers run very high down here.
Yeah.
To kind of keep comments to oneself.
A bicyclist might pull out their stand your ground law.
Just absolutely.
Because a three-year-old is screaming explicatives at them. You know. But, yeah, you know, I have a woman at church who have had multiple parishioners see me bike riding around town, and I have not been wearing a helmet.
Mm.
And I had one who just ran up beside me, and I was getting – I thought I was still back in L.A., and I was aggressive. I was bobbing and weaving. I was at Confucian Corner. And they realized, like, is that Father Christian?
Mm.
And they rode up beside me, and he's like, "What the hell's – that's what he said. What the hell's the matter with you?" I'm like, "Oh, hey, Mr. Blah, blah, blah." And he's like, and then the mom rolls out. She's like, "Where's your helmet?
Mm.
You should have a helmet on." And then I look in the back, and there's a kid from youth group, like their son. I feel so bad that I'm showing this example of being aggressive and bobbing and weaving in the midst of traffic. And then another woman saw me too, and she came up to me and she goes, "Listen, you get a helmet on your head, because if you get hit and end up in some nursing home, because you are paralyzed, because you went brain dead, I'm not visiting you."
Mm.
"And I'm going to tell your wife not to take care of you. So you get a helmet on your head right now." And I was like, "Grandma Jean, you're right." So I went to Target, or no, I went online and found out, and, you know, nice, good helmet, affordable. you know, a lot of it's aesthetics. You just think you're going to kind of, I'll admit it, you know, you're going to look, oh, I got a helmet on my head. But, you know, it's right. So now I wear this helmet and I feel very confident every time.
But it's funny because how much of it is based also on our environment and our upbringing. I mean, when I was a kid and I would go biking, my father would always say, you put on that helmet. And, you know, as a kid, we always resist. It's not cool. You know, it's cool. Cumbersome. It's heavy. It's whatever it is. And now as a parent, the part of me that says, you know what? The smartest thing in the world. Those little brain buckets they're important.
Brain buckets, yes.
Brain buckets.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
It hits. Yeah, when Grandma Jean said, I will not visit you when you are brain dead in the hospital because you didn't wear your helmet. I was like, it's a good point.
Really I'll come visit you.
Thank
I'll
you. Well, because you're my rabbi. You're my rabbi. So we also have with us today a commissioner, and we have a doctor with us today. Because today we are talking about the Black History Month, but not just Black History Month, but also just the reasoning and the birth of it, why it was birthed, and how it began, how it has been affecting and influencing our communities at large. But then we'll funnel it down to get to how is it affecting Martin County, where we live, and that could be any county for any of you who are listening to this radio show. But we have Dr. Jay Chompson here, who was a teacher here in Martin County from 1967 to 1989, and was the first person to come and integrate a Palm City Elementary, it's an all-white
school district.
The whole school district. So Dr. Jay Thompson, I'm sure, do people call you Dr. Jay?
Yes.
So Dr. Yes. Jay, so welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you. And then we also have also Commissioner Eula Clark, also lovingly known as the Commish. She and I have done just lots of work together, including Alpha, where we brought together about six or seven churches from all different denominations and races and ethnicities, and it was just a taste of heaven. So I'm always indebted to her for all the great work she does in this community for bridge building. And so, Commish, it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. This year I'm vice mayor, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Commish vice mayor.
Oh, commish
well,
vice mayor.
Vice mayor is good.
Yeah, it's like when I talk to my boss, he's like, he's the Reverend Dr. Todd Cederberg. He's not just the Reverend Todd Cederberg, Reverend Doctor. So, all right. So, first off, let's just start from the beginning here. You know, we all met yesterday and we talked about this, and jumping into Black History Month, we really need to know, and I think a lot of people are not aware of this as well, is why it started. And when it started, I mean, there is a specific reason of why it came to be. So, Dr. Jay, can you speak to that?
Yes. In order to get an appreciation of Black history, we must go back to the beginning of it. Black history started during the 1920s. A man by the name of Carter G. Wilson was a historian and as well as a history teacher in the public school system of Washington, D.C. And during that time, he noticed that in his delivery of the history of black of America, the history of the black man was left out. So he questioned the publishers and everything, and he was told that if he would come up with some ideas and some valid information, that they would make sure that it would be published. So he got together a group of committee of people called the Committee of Black American Studies, and they compiled a series of accomplishments of Black America. He went back to them, and as a result of it, during the month of February 1926, Black history became a part of the American society. The purpose of Black history was to bring about a public awareness of the many contributions that we as blacks have given to make America what it is today. We too had a part in the development of America. So the month that was taken for the celebration was February, which is the shortest month of the year. And it was during the second week of February. It was centered around birthdays of two major persons. Number one, Abraham Lincoln, who was called the Great Emancipator, and Frederick Douglass, who was an abolitionist. Abraham Lincoln, birthday on the 12th of February. Frederick Douglass on the 14th of February. And it was during that month. And basically, in the South, every year, the second week of February was considered Black History Week. And we discussed the accomplishments, the pros and the cons, and everything.
Now, this would happen in the schools and public forums. How was this celebrated back then?
Mainly, it was celebrated in the Black schools in the South.
So it wasn't an integrated holiday or celebration yet? I mean, you didn't see this happening in white schools or white civic centers?
No.
Okay.
All right. This lasted up until the four, as far as the celebration was mainly done by Black people in the South. During President Ford's administration, there was a decree set up stating that we would call it Black Heritage Month, and it would be for the entire month instead of 1 week. Hmm. It would be for the entire month, and the month was, since it was the shortest month of the year again, it was decided that it would be done in February. And since that time, it has really blossomed out throughout the nation.
Now, do you know what pushed President Ford to make a presidential decree to establish this as a whole month that would be celebrated by the nation?
There were a number of Blacks who said that 1 week was not enough. So they got with people in Congress, and as a result of it, the finding was that we were right, and it should be more than 1 week. And it was used as the entire month of February.
You know, it's interesting, you know, that before this time, there just, from what I'm hearing from you, there was no sign, whether in the history books or in the schools or in museums or wherever, that was really celebrating, or civic centers, that was giving exposure to the contributions of Black Americans, right? And so that wasn't even on the map on there. And so I remember just growing up in Libertyville, Illinois, and, you know, just how times have progressed, where Libertyville, Illinois, which is pretty much, you know, it was more or less a white suburb, but still, the growth that you talked about there led us where in the classroom we were being taught about W.E.B. Du Bois. We were taught Booker T. Washington, not just Martin Luther King, right? But all the great inventors, all the great mathematicians that were there because of this collective contribution, white, Black, you know, Latino, wherever. But this, what that has developed for us as Americans to know that it wasn't just a singular race that really was the history. I mean, is that before this, there was just no sign of the contributions of Black Americans, whether as inventors or as from all different industries of how they've contributed to the development and growth of our country.
That's correct.
Well, Father Christian, you know that I think that the general premise at that time from slavery forward was the idea of suppression, not suppression and oppression, not expressing great achievements. So when people wanted to show that there were great achievements, it took a lot of effort to even go back and try to find out who had done what, because some of these things were suppressed. People had done things, had created things, whether it was a shoe lasting machine, whether, you know, Benjamin Banneker, people who had done great things and gone and done research and helped to find and even to just bring some of the main geographical points of America out when people had gone west and done certain things. Some of the credit wasn't given to, you know, Blacks who had helped in that time. And so It's just one of those things. That's why you didn't have that in the history book. It's continuing to take an effort to get that known. Even now, during Black History Month, people think of, like you said, Martin Luther King and some of the more well-known people. But there are so many others who have created so many things. And because it's not chronicled in history books, it's even hard. People have to go and search. Thank God for things like YouTube and people doing their own searches and sending messages and the activity in social media, that more people are becoming more aware.
Right. And I think that's just it too, is you know, we live in this global village where access to information today is much greater than it used to be. You know, I remember as a kid growing up, when I was in 7th, 8th grade, I had an African-American teacher, great guy, by the way, Mr. Jones. If he's listening, he was a middle school teacher for a while, and then he had always said he had braces later in life, and said, when I get my braces removed, I will become a sportscaster for TSN, to which he now reports on the Toronto Raptors. But
oh my gosh, what happened?
But it was an interesting thing, because, you know, in 7th, 8th grade, it was, you know, we would learn about Black History Month. We would, for literally every day, we would watch Roots. We would, you know, watch the story unfold of Kunta Kinte and just, you know, the struggle of slavery in America. And then suddenly after, you know, Roots, it was let's just shoot forward all the way to Nelson Mandela and learn about the struggles and everything else, as opposed to learning about those other stories, the other part of history, the inventions, the ability to exert oneself in a society that sometimes was rather closed and closed off.
Well, and when I did just do a little preparation for the show today of just looking at when, and so many websites have this now, and different radio shows have done this, where they always, at every hour, they're talking about another great contributor from Black History Month. And just the list of scientists that you don't hear about, right? You never hear about. I mean, we made a there was a great movie that was made recently about it, you know?
The Hidden Figures from the NASA, the woman.
Right. The women there. So, and I know it's just... that is the importance of Black History Month, more of just bringing more and more awareness. And I would say not only for all of America to know this, of course, but wouldn't you say also for Black Americans, for young Black Americans, to be aware of and we're in some communities where there is still much suppression or oppression, or there's messaging going on saying there's a glass ceiling, or there's only so far you can go, right? And to be learning, say, wait a minute, since 1920, since 1900, there have been Black Americans who have been on the foreground of developing and being great, who've been, you know, PhD, wonderful people who've developed this. We wouldn't be who we were today without them.
Right.
And sometimes that messaging, and I'm speaking as a naive white guy over here, but from what I see from my perspective, that messaging a lot of times and in some areas of our country is just not there.
Yeah, it is. It's not. And, you know, it's people, I guess you'd consider it a stereotype if you think that it's only just somebody who's great in basketball or maybe great in music, you know, if they're a hip-hop or in the movies. But that's not the only message that young people should see, or even gangster types. You have to look at both sides of the coin. But there are so many other great achievements, and I know that Dr. Thompson, no one has taught students about some of the great people who've done things. I think for Florida especially, one of the persons that we look towards is Mary McLeod Bethune, who created that Bethune-Cookman College up in Daytona Beach. It's called Starting with Five Little Girls Underneath a Tree, and then that grew up to be a whole college and now a university in Daytona Beach.
Wow. Well, Dr. J, you know, I know that you... So we're the first one to come in to integrate the white school system here in Martin County. So you were asked to come in and to walk into an area that wasn't too friendly at that time towards African Americans. You came in to be a teacher, and not only were you there, but you were there for quite some time and changed many lives, and you had an all-white class.
Sure.
So how did you approach that? How did you approach that to start to communicate all these, not just from an all education in general, what you were teaching, but I'm sure you spent some time also bringing exposure to all the great accomplishments of black men and women in America. But you have this during a time of you were just starting integration into a school. Mm-hmm. Was that received well with an all-white class? And how did, what was the tactic, the strategy you used? Because you were very successful at it, and well, and you are well-loved in this community and well-looked to, so they didn't want you to leave.
Well, when I first went there, my name went there before I got there. I had done a lot of things in the black community, and I was well received at Palm City. And at the time, Palm City was not a place for black people to live or to go into. But after I got there and everything, I was welcomed, open arms and everything. And gradually, I began to integrate the black history of our society with the curriculum that had. So
you had already developed a lot of relationships, and the community had already embraced you,
yes,
white and black.
Yes,
it already
yes.
looked to you with respect because of all the work you've been doing.
Yes, I'll tell you what happened one time. We had somebody from the State Department to come down, and it came, and this person came to my room. So she said to me, what phase of the curriculum do you teach? I said, the story. She said, the story. I said, yes, the story. She said, well, that's not in the Florida curriculum. She said, well, you're going to have to explain to me what you mean by that. I said, well, in the past I taught his story. Now I'm teaching the story. So that got that. But all during the years at Palm City, each year, I had a big display about black America, and it was well received, and a lot of the teachers from the other schools asked if they could take my project and, you know, deliver it at the other schools, and it worked very well for me, and I had no problem with it. And the children, they really didn't look at it and say, well, black history, you know, just that I was just forcing it on them. They figured that it was a learning situation and it will help them to be a well-rounded person. And this is how I did it. I did it through art shows. We had art shows. We had operettas. Palm City was the school of Martin County. I'm not saying it because I was there, but I put my whole heart into it. And the people were very responsive. And I found out one thing about it. If children like you, parents love you.
Okay.
And if you are fair, that's the most important. I didn't give a rap about whether your dad was a doctor or a lawyer. You were in my class. You were there on business, or you didn't have any business there. And that was my policy. And I was very friendly but firm. And we got along fine.
You mentioned something yesterday about, for you, that it wasn't about color. It was about character.
Yes.
Right, and so that, I think, it seems like to be a theme throughout your life that
sure.
has allowed you to gain the respect of so many mm-hmm. people and create such friendships mm-hmm. around the community, because you're not worried. You weren't seen there being like, I'm just coming in here and I'm going to give my way. You were sitting here being
I'm
like,
I'm not going to force it.
I'm not going to force anything. What I'm here, though, is that I care about is that of your character.
Yeah, okay. When you said that, reminds me of a little poem that I learned when I was in first grade. Color does not make the man. I'm glad to meet a man who's proud that he's black, who accepts his color and appreciate the fact. I'm glad to meet a man who's proud that he's white. All of us have some color. Any color is all right. But I'm glad to meet people when they strictly understand that character makes the person, and color does not make the man. And until America learns this, we are going to be behind the eight ball.
Yeah. Yeah. As a priest, it just seems, you know, as we read the scripture and as we look at the history of, from the global society, that tribalism has always just been a part of the human experience.
Right.
It has brought safety and security to us from millennia beyond. But it also has also led to great divisions and and strong camps that have divided and said, okay, these people over here are less than, because it gives security to this group over here, mm-hmm. whether we're talking about, you know, 200 BC or 2000 BC or 2019, that it gives us safety, gives us security sometimes. It helps us with our own insecurities. But I think it's in our cellular DNA that this tribalistic mentality that sometimes gets divided by just region, by color, by ethnicity, by socioeconomic, by sports teams. you name it, but it gives us strength to know that I'm part of this camp, and normally that means that camp over there or that group of people is not equal, and we might be speaking. But to you, that what you've done is saying, listen, I don't care about the camps, I don't care about the tribes, I care about character, and that's what I bring in.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I think it's also about how we understand that the second, as Dr. Thompson even said, the second we can remove that stigma, or the second we can not see people of color, but see people for their inner truth, who they really are, the mm-hmm. content, as you know, the Reverend mm-hmm. King so aptly put it, the content of their character. Because, mm-hmm. you know, that's when we see people, as we say in Hebrew, panim al panim, we see people face to face.
Right.
And I think so often we fall back on our insecurities or things that are familiar for us, rather than branching out of that box or getting out of our comfort zone to be able to really experience somebody for who they are.
Now, is there a part of it, and you for Commissioner and Doctor, you tell me that with Black History Month, that is obviously there is an awareness and an exposure, that it's a platform for us to be aware of all the incredible and beautiful accomplishments that Black Americans have made to this awesome country that we live in. But is there also another part of it, too, of how do we continue the dream, and how do we continue to break down the barriers that are out there in America? Are there... Because I'm sure it's different from wherever you go and how it's celebrated, whatever community is celebrating it. But are there attempts that where it is a way of bringing together people collaboratively and getting people engaged, and with that goal of saying, hey, this is not a Black thing. This is not just a Black thing. It's like the NAACP, you know, here in Martin County says, listen, this is not just about Black people. You know, anyone could be here and mm-hmm. join this. This is for the equality of all people that we have here. But does Black History Month have a goal, or do you think that's also about how we can continue to break down barriers? Where we're focusing just on character, we're focusing just on the eternal, the internal life of someone, not the external. Have you seen that, or did that goal need to be celebrated?
As an educator, I have found out that if you start out early in life with kids, bringing about awareness, it's not only Black history, anything. If you bring about a positive awareness of something, then it perpetuates mm-hmm. and it goes on, and then there's a bright side to it. People are not as pessimistic as they would be had they not known about certain things, and that's how I have been able. I have never tried to force anything on anyone. I let them decide. After I have given my point of view, you accept it or, you know, reject it. But I would like, I would like for you to have a very positive attitude, instead of just having a formed attitude before you even make an attempt to make a decision.
All right, so mm-hmm. have you ever had or can you give us an example or a time when you as a teacher mm-hmm. went head-to-head with some tension there, where you had someone who was pushing back, whether it was a teacher or whether it was a student, and you just had to be, you know, I'm not here to try to change you. I'm the teacher here, but someone who, because of the color of your skin, or just you can tell there was some friction there. Did you ever confront that? Because it seemed like you really had, you yourself, your approach really was extremely successful, and you had beautiful relationships with all the students you taught, and there wasn't a lot of racial tension. But did you ever have to use some good strategy or a way of approaching this, being, this is going to be taking a little bit more work here, because I can feel this student is not really feeling what I'm putting out here?
Well, you said that reminded me of an incident that happened in school one day. Well, it was during Black History Month, and I was really into it, talking about the accomplishments and everything. So this little fella said, "Mr. Thompson, did white people contribute anything to our society?" I said, "We talked about that last month."
The last 11 months.
Yeah.
Well, you hear that. There's that question there. Some people will say, why don't we have a White History Month?
Well, yeah. Actually, in 1988, when I came here in 1985 to Martin County, but I started what is called the Black Heritage Association, Inc., and that went on until the, I guess, mid-90s or so. I left the organization in 93 when I went to law school, but they continued till about 1997 or 98. But and even during that time, in the 90s and coming up to the 2000s, some people actually ask, well, why do we need a Black Heritage Association? And what is it all about? And why don't we have a White Heritage Association? And what is the name? And actually, if you look in the state of Florida at sunbiz.org, a lot of organizations that had the name Black This or Black That in it, a lot of them dissolved and changed their names and redid a lot of things. And that was just a part of something that was going on during that era. But the main point of the Black Heritage Association was, number one, to gather information about the arts in Martin County, to allow people to participate with other groups, and to share information, to let people know that there is so much that we can do to share among different ethnic groups, and to learn from each other. And that was a point. It was like a collection point to gather information and to share information, and even to get unity among churches, among various parts of the community, so that people would understand their history, where they were coming from, and what needs to happen to make things better. And I think that was a start, for me at least, in Martin County, of helping with race relations and to let people be proud of achievements and what has happened.
And it's experiential, as opposed to being taught or saying you need a change, of saying, come on in, experience this God's beloved community.
Yes.
This is what heaven looks like. Experience the culture, experience the people, experience all of us, white, black, you know, Puerto Rican, Latino, Asian, and be like, you know, your brothers and your sisters, and we're all children of God. And that experience breaks down people, where instead of having to teach it, I want to just take a quick break, because I want to show some love to our sponsors and stuff like that. And when we come back, we could continue this of now more on a micro scale of here in Martin County, of the how has Black history affected our community, but on a bigger scale, though, how are we celebrating just the Global Village? How we does this taste of heaven, the beloved community, and how that helps continue to build and break down barriers that are out there, and more just build bridges through experience, not through just teaching, saying we need to do this, but just how do we create more opportunities of experiencing the belovedness of God's diverse community. So we'll be right back. Hey everyone, it's Father Christian. I want to invite you to a brand new YouTube channel that I have started called Your Favorite Christian. It's on YouTube. Go in there, check it out, subscribe. I release a new vlog every single Monday. It's following around the adventures of a wacky priest and getting into the community and learning new things and talking about everything from relationships to pop culture to major acts of faith. So come join us, or come join me, on Your Favorite Christian on YouTube. You know I'll get it.
Welcome back, Stuart. Welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi.
Or you know, Rabbi and a Priest.
It always sounds different when it's not the voice of our female recording artist who says it. But as we have been engaging and discussing this whole issue and challenge of the history of Black History Month and where we're at currently. I mean, we are in 2019, and I guess the question I would have, both for you, Dr. Thompson, and Eula, is we understand as intellectual human beings that we need to understand where we have come from in order to understand where we are going. And I think as a group, I think we have a pretty good understanding now of the history of Black History Month and where this originated from, why the need, why the experience, but then to kind of push it forward 60 some odd years to be able to look at it currently today to say, are we where we need to be or where we should be? And if we're not, what measures can we do or put in place to be able to get there? In terms of, Are we any better off today than we were back then? And if we're not, how do we go about that?
You want to try? I think doing exactly what we're doing today, get the word out, get the message out, get into talk to each other, get into genuinely know each other and to find ways and means and forums and to use every opportunity in the schools, in churches, in business settings, to
public gatherings,
to just get the word out. I think it's one of those together we can. We have to, but first we have to see the whole. What's the purpose behind it? The purpose behind it is to know that we are all working together to create a better society, and each of us is important. Each of us has an important part, a role to play. And so when we get more inclusive and we include each other with activities and learn about each other, that's how we can get the move going.
Through interaction. Mm-hmm. Through interaction, a lot of positive things can come out of it. And I think that everybody will have a better understanding as to the purpose of what we are trying to present to each other and learn from each other, because it's very important. I might think one way, you might think another way, but if we can come to a mutual agreement, that's the most important thing. And to learn and to accept people who they are, instead of just by the color of their skin. And it's very important that we consider these factors to be a part of the growing situation.
And yeah. through both of your experience, because you've been here in Martin County and certainly in Stuart for a very long time. Father Anderson and I are kind of newbies here, being here 4.5 years, but your experience over the last 20, 30 years of being able to see huge growth or huge change in the area. Do you feel that through your experience that there has been much change, or there needs to be much more change in terms of, not judging others on the color of their skin, or being able to experience through relationship one another?
I think that we have come a ways, but there is a long ways to go, mm-hmm. because there's still room for improvement. As I think about it, It reminds me of a poem that I use a lot of poetry, and at least I have down through the years, to make things inspirational to them. It's called "It Couldn't Be Done." Somebody said that it couldn't be done, but he with a chuckle replied that maybe it couldn't, but he would be one who wouldn't say no until he tried it. So he buckled right in with a bit of a grin on his face. If he worried, he hid it. He started to sing as he tackled the thing that could not be done, and he did it. There are thousands to tell you that it cannot be done. There are thousands to prophesy failure. There are thousands to tell you one by one the dangers that wait to assail you. But just buckle right in with a bit of a grin. Take out off your coat and go to it. Just start to sing as you tackle the thing that could not be done, and you do it. Have a positive attitude. That's the whole thing. That's the whole ball of wax.
Yeah.
Definitely. And you're mentioning about whether or not it looks like change has happened. I can see change in Martin County, but the main thing is that people have to make that effort. I think being a rabbi, I think one of your greatest achievements that you want to see in your congregation and in the world is peace. And if we get to the point where we can say that we as Americans especially would not take up arms against each other because of the color of our skin or because of certain ethnic relationships, that if we can get to that point where we can feel that way about each other, then I think that we're achieving something.
Right.
I really think that we're achieving something. So everybody, I think interracial marriages, relationships with people in terms of workplace relationships, how we regard each other, regardless of skin color, that people are respecting each other. I think that those things, and there's some things may be small, but it goes a long way. I know when I came here, certain people wouldn't shop in certain locations, and now some of that has changed. So little by little, some things are changing, but I think that there's still a core of some things which are people are holding on to various old ways and not wanting and wanting to resist acceptance and across the board. And so that's difficult. But that's why we continue to work every day. That's why I created a series of race relations with health, race relations with education, race relations and other religions, and how things would work in the community. We've talked about race relations and dealing with the justice system and all of these things. We had meetings after meetings for about 5 or 6 months at Ground Floor Farms, and the community came out and they wanted to share, they wanted to meet, they wanted to move forward. When I work with Reverend Christian with the Alpha Group, people came out and they wanted to be one. They wanted to work together. It's not everybody, but it is some people. And hopefully we can one day say, thank God, it will be most of us who are moving towards this, where we can know that we're working to really acknowledge that change and to still push that change forward.
And I think as leaders, we need to create the venues for that to happen. We can't make the change. I think that's just God working on all of our hearts. But things like when we did Alpha, I heard from so many people who said, this is the first time I've crossed the tracks. This is the first time I've been in East Stewart. This is the first time that, you know, that I mean, that those small little steps there, and they were joyful and like, my gosh, this is East Stewart's great, and I love meeting all my new friends and neighbors who are literally 2 minutes away.
Walked in East Stewart.
And then we did prayer walks and an Advent walk and a Palm, and we'll be doing a Palm Sunday walk.
But I also think that part of it, too, is as we've discussed before, about creating those sacred relationships and those mm-hmm. sacred spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, I as I mentioned before, in when we met privately, you know, I grew up in a very large Reform synagogue in Canada. And you know, I remember as a child sitting through services, and you know, a black family walked into the sanctuary, and you could hear the pin drop.
Right.
And I remember saying to my mom at such a young age, "Why are people staring? What's going on?" And you know, only later did I realize, you know, it was other people making judgments.
Well, there are black Jews. There are Asian Jews. There are Jews of every race and every culture on the planet. But people had seen, and that's the thing, is they see. So they see and they make their judgment, and, well, they don't look like us, so therefore they can't be part of us. And I think that, you know, to break down that barrier and break down that wall to be able to say, we embrace, look, we know it's a Jewish community, we embrace all people. We have people of all different faiths who join us for services to experience Jewish life. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's something I would definitely encourage, which is, you know, get out of your comfort zone.
There you go.
Get out on the street. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my concern has always been, you know, forums like this are great, right? But we also are the ones to facilitate and to be able to push the change. My concern are the ones that are on the street who aren't in our churches, aren't in our synagogues, aren't of the same understanding and empathetic understanding of trying to make change in the world. How do we reach others in our society or others in our own county on a local level to try and bring about such awareness? And now there's dead air.
And there's dead air on that one, right? Uh-huh. No, I was just with the meeting with Pastor Gore the other day, and Pastor Gore is you know, his take on is literally hitting the streets. He is hitting the streets and talking with folks, and you have to be prepared that some people are not going to be ready for it. Right. They're just not going to be ready for it. But you continue to create the venues, you knock on the doors, you create the invitation for like his one of his big passions is health, according, mm-hmm. you know, health awareness.
Cleveland Clinic Martin, he wants to get them in the community, especially in the black community.
Right. Yeah. And use that as a catalyst for also for more collaboration and having people engaged together of all different races as well. And, you know, as I think about it as a church, people always say the most segregated day of the week is Sunday, right? And I understand that some of that's just cultural, you know, that some people like to worship a specific way. And that's fine. And some people feel comfortable just being, you know, I can understand an African-American church might feel comfortable because there's a cultural way, there's a denominational way that's there, and they just wouldn't kind of feel the vibe as much as maybe in a white church that might have a different form of music. It's more anglicized music. I get all that. So I'm glad that there's a lot of different kinds of denominations and churches. However, it is really powerful once in a while where you do have a black and a white church or a black and a Latino church that they come together, yes. and they worship together to experience. They don't have to do it every Sunday, but to have that power and feel the spirit of what it's like to be able to all worship together, to have the synagogue and the church come together. And again, you'll be idealistic to think that we're going to be doing that every weekend. No, I think that takes away from some of our traditions because we can't really fully pertain to do all that we need to do. However, quarterly, you know, those are powerful moments. Those are intentional moments of let's worship together. And usually when we've experienced that, it's been powerful. People are like, that was amazing. I loved it.
And I think there's it's an interfaith group, but they've tried to work with everybody. And I think that that's something that is coming up, but I don't know that date. But I want to mention a couple of things. You mentioned about hitting the streets with Pastor Gore. Well, I know somebody who really hit the streets was Ollie Harvey when she was alive, and she had the Building Bridges program so that people would come in and would help the young people, especially in the East Stewart community. And people from the churches, whether it's a Presbyterian church, Episcopal, those people came. So people have come, and there are people, and it needs to be acknowledged that there are people working together, black and white, working together. I know that in this weekend on February 23rd at the 10th Street Recreation Center from 8 a.m. to 12 noon, there's going to be a major paint-up, clean-up program in the East Stewart area. And people have signed up already, but anybody who wants to come out can still come out on Saturday and help out with that program. And that's a part of people getting together. It's about painting, but it's about creating relationships, getting together with relationships. And same thing to recognize those who have achieved on February 24th on Sunday evening at Pastor Gore's church. There's going to be a service, a Black History Month service, to recognize some people in the community. And the very next week after that, on March 9th, The NAACP, you mentioned the NAACP, they're going to be having the Freedom Fund banquet, and they're going to be recognizing more people and talking more about that struggle, that creating equality, and that moving forward and dealing with race relations in our country. So those are three big things that are coming up the end of this February month and going even into the month of March. So it's just wonderful that our community is making plans to continue to move forward.
There's momentum. There's momentum that's happening. There's opportunities that are out there. Commissioner, Vice Mayor, you just said about three of them. St. Mary's will be out there, so adopting a house tomorrow morning. So you know, if you want to come join our team, there'll be plenty of teams to come join. But the main thing is not about painting the house. It's about getting the community, making some new relationships, making new friendships. So,
but I think that's just it, is we are one community.
Yes.
Whether we are Jewish, Christian, white, black, it doesn't matter. If we care about where we live, which I don't think that there's anyone, hopefully within our listeners, that doesn't appreciate that. I mean, if you take a look at where we live, it is a beautiful area. And I think, you know, the message that I would like to leave today is one of inspiration, of we can do it. It is achievable if we open up our heart and see people panim al panim, face to face.
It can be done.
It can be done. Open up your hearts. Be courageous. Take a risk. Get out of your comfort zone. Vice Mayor Eula Clark, thank you so much for being here. Dr. J. Thompson, thank you so much.
Sure.
Your books are also available, I think, over at the Heritage Museum.
Stuart Heritage Museum.
So it's been a pleasure. Also want to do a shameless plug. So I started a new vlog called Your Favorite Christian on YouTube. Jump on there, because if you want to see trying to get out there into the community and be talking with all different kinds of people, to just go on, subscribe. We will see you next week. God bless you all. Go out there, love on someone, and let's live into God's blessed community.